Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. Today marks a milestone for California's first experiment with independently drawn political maps. This morning, the Citizens Redistricting Commission takes one final look at its newly minted maps for the Congress, state legislature, and state board of equalization. As in most things, there are winners and losers. The California Report's Sacramento Bureau Chief John Myers has the details.
Redistricting is a zero-sum game. You move the boundary lines of a political district by even just a city block, and it changes population numbers in such a way that other district lines must also be moved. It's a reality check that the 14 men and women on California's Citizens Redistricting Commission faced at every turn, even at Thursday's meeting as they were examining the final drafts.
We don't capture that little snippet right there from Fountain to there to keep that community intact.
What Commissioner Andre Parvenu wanted to tweak was a small section of a state assembly district in Los Angeles. But the commission's map drawing staff said it might take a couple of hours to rerun all of the data reports needed, and there are 80 state assembly districts. So the change wasn't made, a necessity, admitted Commissioner Michelle DiGiulio.
I think if we had another 6 months, we'd probably get these details nailed down. But I think with the timeline we're dealing with, this may be where we are.
By law, the maps must be certified by August 15th. Today, the commission stops its work to let the public review what they've done. In a macro sense, the most notable change in these maps is how many incumbent politicians may be out of a job. Four assembly districts now have two incumbents drawn into the same district. In Congress, 11 districts now have two or more incumbents who will have to either battle each other next year, move somewhere else, or step down. Democrats still dominate both the legislature and California's congressional delegation, and in many cases, the new districts will mean Democrats pick up seats as Republican voter registration has gone down. The public is just dialing into this process. Political observers and activists, though, have been watching for weeks, and they think the maps may end up in court.
Very plain to see that the commission could have done better.
Stephen Ochoa is with the Mexican American Legal Defense Fund, or MALDEF. His group and others may end up suing because they do not believe the commission drew enough political districts that favor Latinos. The Federal Voting Rights Act requires, when possible, districts be drawn with enough minorities for those voters to have political power. The commission did draw those kinds of districts, but, says Ochoa, not enough of them.
This is an example where the commission specifically chose to respect some communities of interest over others.
That term, communities of interest, has also loomed large in the process. The voter-approved constitutional amendments that created the commission gave the map drawers a definition of communities of interest, but there was no such guidance when the needs of those communities conflicted. That's led to some tense moments in recent days. Some commissioners have said the boundaries of a single district may lead them to vote no on an entire map. Commissioner Stan Forbes lashed out at that idea in a meeting last Sunday night.
To choose to vote against 53 districts for the sake of one is a mistake, and I think a real disservice to the public.
9 of the 14 commissioners must vote yes to certify the maps, and that must be made up of supermajorities inside each subset of the panel's Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. Even then, the process is almost sure to keep going after mid-August. In addition to the threat of lawsuits, several political watchers expect the maps to be challenged by referendum, meaning they'd appear on the ballot at the next statewide election. And all of that could lead the state Supreme Court to step in, as it last did in drawing political districts 20 years ago. For the California Report, I'm John Myers in Sacramento.
One of the largest municipal bankruptcies in California history looks set to roll to a close after a federal judge gave preliminary approval to Vallejo's plan to emerge from Chapter 9. The Solano County City has spent more than $10 million on bankruptcy-related attorney and consultant fees over the last 3 years, but city officials say they've won big savings in rejiggered employee contracts and deferred and reduced bond interest repayments. A state audit of the University of California finds a lack of transparency behind the way it divvies up money between the 10 campuses. For instance, UC Santa Barbara gets $12,000 and change per student, UC San Francisco $55,000. The audit asks why UC spends less per pupil at schools that serve more Black and Latino students. In a written response, UC President Mark Udoff called the racial correlation unwarranted and inflammatory, noting the San Francisco campus exclusively educates graduate students in medicine. Today, a federal Blue Ribbon Commission issues a long-awaited report on nuclear waste, a subject we've been reporting on this week. Senior editor Craig Miller reports for our Climate Watch team.
Today's action by President Obama's Commission on America's Nuclear Future doesn't create any new regulations or even suggest a specific alternative to the politically embattled Yucca Mountain disposal site in Nevada. It's a list of recommendations, not so much for where to put high-level radioactive refuse, but how to move forward.
What we want to make sure is that we have the capability and infrastructure so that those materials can be managed safely.
Per Peterson is on the Blue Ribbon Commission, and he also chairs the Nuclear Engineering Department at UC Berkeley. He says what might make the most sense is to get some of the spent fuel into longer-term interim storage, and a good place to start would be with the state's two decommissioned plants, Humboldt Bay on the north coast and Rancho Seco east of Stockton, where nearly 400 tons of spent fuel remain on site.
By the time we're moving along with that process, we'll also have a good basis to make informed decisions about what we should do with the spent fuel that is at San Onofre and Diablo Canyon.
Sounds like he's preparing us for a long haul, and he is. Peterson says a permanent solution could easily be another 2 or 3 decades away. Meanwhile, there are nearly 3,000 metric tons of spent fuel at California reactor sites in pools of water and concrete casks waiting for a permanent home. For the California Report, I'm Craig Miller.
You'll find a link to our special series on nuclear waste at californiareport.org/climatewatch. And that's the California Report for Friday, July 29th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, with additional engineering by Seal Muller. Susie Racho, Paul Ancor, and Nina Thorson directed the show this week. Our interns are Julia Bernstein, Nicholas Carpenter, Bridget Bodner, and Jefferson Beavers. The editor is Dan Brecky. The senior online editor is Gabriel Cohn. Victoria Malione is our producer. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. The executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information available at chevron.com. And Barracuda Networks, innovators of simple solutions to complex IT problems, such as balancing network traffic for improved performance. Barracuda.com.